Welcome to Leap Leaders Unplugged, where your host, me, Siobhan Nealon, takes you through an exploration of the extraordinary paths of influential leaders and innovators from both the corporate and the nonprofit sectors, who are both making impactful changes and redefining the future of business and beyond. Through these engaging discussions, the podcast seeks to empower you to spark innovation and change in your own organizations or your own career, transcending both financial success to helping you fulfill aspirations for purpose and freedom in all aspects of working life. Whether you're a corporate executive, an inspiring entrepreneur, a nonprofit leader, or an established business owner on a personal quest for self-discovery, Leap Leaders Unplugged provides the motivation, resources, and community to guide your journey. Don't forget to subscribe now and join our movement of visionary leaders who are not only navigating, but actively shaping and hopefully revolutionizing how the world is built. Welcome, everyone. This is Siobhan Nealon with Leap Leaders Unplugged, your favorite podcast, I'm sure. And today I have one of my favorite people ever. It's Marissa Schaefer, who's also a very, very good friend of mine. And I'm excited to have her today with us as being one of my, not only a great friend, she really is one of my dearest inner circle friends, but she also is really creating innovative change in both the corporate and nonprofit sectors with her extraordinary work, as well as her amazing, vibrant personality, which you all are going to get a chance to meet. So welcome, Maritza.
Thank you so much. So good to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah. So it's funny because we were joking beforehand. It was like, we really are such good friends that it's funny to sort of talk more. We don't really talk shop about work as much as we probably should. But I wanted to have you do a little intro about who you are and what your title is, what your company is a little bit about, and so that people can get a slice of that piece of you. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the personal stuff as well.
Yeah, thank you. Certainly. My name is Maritza Schaefer, and I'm the founder of Masu Consulting, which is a company dedicated to organizational development. Most specifically, I help organizations, mostly nonprofits, but not exclusively, that are really on a mission to change the world for the better, and supporting them in developing the conceptual infrastructure, as well as the processes and systems, and most importantly, ways of being within the organization, so that everybody who's working together is thriving to the best of their ability and doing really excellent work.
And I know if like anyone I know who knows you for this work, they're really like, they rave about you and the work that you're doing. So do you have some sort of exciting, I don't know, things that you're proud of about this work that you're doing? I mean, we relate to this. I mean, I work in diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging as well. And I know we've shared a lot of stories about that, but is there anyone that gem that sort of stands out for you about the, in the ways that you, help transform a company or an organization?
Oh my God. Absolutely. I just wanted to give you like the tightest intro possible, so I wouldn't like take up all this time, but since you asked, so this is what happened. My background is in communications. And so I worked in video production for a bunch of years. Then I got a master's degree in communication, and I studied public opinion. And I'm really fascinated by this idea that us humans can speak our reality into being, right? Mm-hmm. And that works at the macro scale, at the societal level, but it also works within organizations and even within smaller groups of friends or families and such. And so I've always been really fascinated by how it's so important the way we communicate and the impact it has in our reality. And so after those studies, I went and did communications for a lot of different causes, I guess I'll call them. I worked on environmental issues. I worked on women rights. I worked on marriage equality. I've worked on what in the US are called progressive issues. In most places, it's just called human rights in general, and environmental concerns completely tied into the human rights question. And so my job for many, many years was helping organizations and change makers think about how to talk about the work so that we could get more support for the work, so that we could speak a better world into being by engaging folks in the stories about why these changes are important, how it will benefit everybody, how we're all interconnected in a very profound way. And what happened is that over the years of doing this work, I accidentally ended up leading, I believe, 3 organizational restructures. And so while it was not my job description, I was not in HR, I was not an external consultant, I always bumped again the ways of working within organizations actually being the biggest challenge to my work. Mm-hmm. And so I started peer coaching colleagues, I started managing up my bosses, I started organizing my coworkers so that we could find better ways of doing our jobs. And sometimes that meant that we needed to hire some people. Sometimes it meant that we needed to rewrite our job descriptions. Sometimes it looked like really rethinking the tools and processes and workflows that we were utilizing so that we could accomplish our goals more effectively. And I always had a huge sense of urgency around this work because of the things that we were trying to accomplish in these jobs, right? Like I'm trying to save the oceans, or I'm trying to stop slavery in a particular industry, things that are really pressing for all of us, I believe. And in the course of doing that, it was very lovingly pointed out to me by some colleagues that what I was doing on the side of my desk, if you will, was actually a whole industry. There's a whole industry around organizational development, organizational culture, and it came to me so intuitively and so easily and so powerfully that about 7 years ago, I went from being the global campaign leader at for the Oceans campaign at Greenpeace International into becoming the founder of my own consulting firm, where I do coaching, facilitation, training, but really consulting in terms of what does an organization need to thrive? And so looking at that from every single perspective. Now, because I'm based in California in the US, although this had repercussions globally, at least in the West, what happened was that a few years back when George Floyd was murdered, a lot of my clients and potential clients were really desperately seeking support in having conversations at their organizations about issues of race, around issues of exhaustion by their staff of color just from being in this world in a particular way. Staff had many demands about ways of operating in corporate environments that cannot stay blind and ignorant to the context in which we live. And so people came to us looking for support with issues of equity, inclusion, and diversity. And I always joked with my colleagues that, okay, so that's what we're calling it today, whatever brings you in the door, in the sense that I have never been able to do organizational development work or organizational consulting work or culture work without centering equity and diversity and inclusion and belonging, because I use a human rights frame for all of my work. So for decades, this has been central to my work because of my personal values. And because there is no way you're going to have an effective organizational context or an effective organizational culture if you're ignoring your people's most basic humanity.
So true. So true.
So I just help the humans human better in a way, to just put it super simply, right? How do we treat each other with respect and compassion in a way that's at the service of the mission of organizations? Because at the end of the day, in a work context, you're not there to be friends. You're not there to be liked. You're there to do a job. But there's so many ways of doing that job. And I believe there's effective and compassionate ways of doing work that are actually, this is what most people are very surprised to find out about when they work with me, that the more compassionate you are in your approach to the work, the better work you're going to produce.
So true. You know, there's study after study that shows that when people feel like they belong, when they feel heard and understood, they perform 25% better. And so that comes with that empathy I know we saw that same increase of all of a sudden everybody wanted to bring in all these consultants around all the racial, I guess it was not that it was new, but it was, everybody was finally paying attention during the pandemic. And all of a sudden everybody was building out their diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging programs and putting more language and adding more facilitators like you and myself into their organizations. And I've also seen what's been interesting is when this is brought in, you really do see the financial changes in organizations, the structural changes, the customers are seem happier. I feel like it trickles through the whole health of the organization when you deal with that basic thing, which is what I think you were just saying. But I also see the opposite is then people I'm noticing people are cutting budgets right now for these types of things. And you start to see also the shriveling of the employees are not working as well together. They're not, the customers aren't as happy. What is your experience of what you're seeing kind of where in 2020, 2021, there was this huge spike in companies really investing in this. And then I feel like there's been a pullback with, 40, 50% of diversity programs being cut from a lot of organizations with what, like the work that we both do. I just think it's very interesting and to see the ramifications and how people are paying attention to that.
Yeah, look, I mean, so two comments around that point of why does the pendulum swing in terms of where are organizations focusing their attention? My analysis is that this kind of work has actually a very strong political component, and it has a very strong spiritual component, believe it or not. And I'll speak to that, to both those issues. So what happens is that there is interest in really having explicit conversations about justice, about equity, about all of these things that I believe should always be centering and should always be addressing, but it's not really, people believe it's not that profitable or not that important to do so until the pain becomes so intense, until something happens that we're forced into those places, right? Then the political environment changes. Folks that believe that those conversations are not in their best interest try to shut them down. There's a lot of fear going around. And because, again, humans are going to human, fear is such a powerful force. We pull back. We decide to not go to the uncomfortable places where we have those conversations. We don't want to be offending anybody. We don't want to go too far. And then really, because as people, it takes a very strong dose of courage and conviction to choose to do the right thing always in any context, and especially at work, of course, where you believe your livelihood could be at stake, right? And so it's kind of predictable and kind of natural that we would go through these phases and these ebbs and flows of how willing we are to do the hard work of creating the world that we want to live in. And throughout history, we've seen how progress is not linear, right? And so we make a little bit of progress and then we're like two step backwards, and it's so frustrating and so demoralizing. And I personally believe that some of us doing the work may not get to see the outcome of what we're planning today, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to sprout and grow and flourish and give us fruit down the track, right? And so I think that you're 100% correct. Right now, we are, especially in the US, in a very awkward socio-cultural political moment where discourse is been degraded beyond recognition, where we're completely polarized, where things that were unspeakable and unfathomable a short 5 years ago are completely normal. And so we're all going through it together. And I think that's why it's extra important to have the clarity of conviction of what everybody believes needs to be done in order, again, to offer all the humans on Earth a basic shot at a decent life, while being able to keep an open mind, while being able to compromise and understand gray areas, which is a huge part of my work. A lot of what I do with organizations is take people through a process where they become a little bit, I'm not going to say more comfortable, but a little bit less uncomfortable with paradox, with ambiguity, with the gray area, with not knowing with 100% certainty, so that we can meet in the middle and create and collaborate, right?
Yeah. And it's really is this sort of the subtler movements is where the magic happens, I find. It's not the big swings. It's the subtler getting people to really see, touch into their own emotional intelligence, whether it's the leaders or the team members that, and like, I think we've talked a little bit about the facilitation that you do. Sorry, couldn't get that word out. The facilitation that you do. Can you talk about maybe some examples where you really saw just some simple changes that really made, influenced in a bigger, had a bigger impact? You know, you really did see those blossoms from the tree.
Yeah, certainly. I think most of the times, if people are genuinely honest about their desire to do things differently, the process is effective, right? So in other words, finding ways to work together that are respectful and compassionate is not rocket science. What usually happens is that we're not willing to go through the discomfort of saying, I don't know, or saying, wow, that makes me really angry, and not having this perfect looking front that we usually tend to have up at work because we want to, again, be liked, be respected. And it's a very human thing to think or feel that we're not good enough as we are. So we're trying to, you know, go further. So here's an example of what I'm talking about. A lot of what I do at work is facilitate extremely contentious, challenging conversations. So for example, staff of color in an organization feel that leadership is not attuned enough with what it means to lead an organization that's not all white, right? And this leaks in every which way. And so then the leader is horrified because what they're hearing is, my staff thinks I'm racist. And what I try to walk people through is that the fact that you're doing racist things, the fact that your staff interprets your behavior as not connected enough to their reality, does not mean that you're a quote racist as, you know, having a bad intention or like disliking people just for the color of the skin or whatever. It just means that you have a piece of work to do around how things are landing with the people that you're working with, right? And so when we take out race, it becomes simply about developing self-awareness of how am I behaving and how is that impacting my people. It goes through the lens of race. It also goes through the lens of power, right? I've worked with leaders that are telling me that, oh, I don't understand why my staff don't come talk to me. I have office hours once a week and like my door's open and like the kettle is on. And I'm like, CEO, nobody's gonna come knocking on your door. Are you nuts? Do you have any idea how intimidating that is? Like, I appreciate the intention behind what you're doing, but before your people are comfortable knocking on your door, sitting in your office and sipping tea together, you're gonna have to reel that way back and build a relationship more slowly so that they know that they can come to you and speak to you without fear of retaliation if they say the wrong thing, or without, you know, any other sort of thing that you're not taking into account because you're in the position of power and because you're thinking, oh, but I'm just Maritza. Why would people be intimidated? Because I don't think of myself as the powerful CEO. I think of myself as me, the friend, the whatever, daughter, right?
Right.
So training people through that. So like, that's one thing. And then in group conversations, I've had facilitations where, again, we've had all, you know, all kinds of contentious situations, a lot of anger, a lot of sadness, a lot of tears, people talking about gender, talking about race, talking about power, talking about authority, things that were not usually comfortable talking about. And the irony is that we're not comfortable talking about them because we don't talk about them, because we don't know how to talk about them, because we believe that something horrible is going to happen if we do so. And so a big part of my job is simply holding the space to have the conversations and have people experience that the worst thing that happens in those conversations is that you have a feeling, right? You're feeling awkward, you're feeling embarrassed, you're feeling regretful, you're feeling angry, you're feeling sad, or you're feeling hopeful, you're feeling excited, you're feeling whatever it is that you're feeling, but a feeling is not a reason to not do the work to be in right relationship with your colleagues and with the mission of your organization. And so I help organizations, namely individual staff members at whatever level I can engage with them, develop a practice of being comfortable enough with having feelings that they do not prefer, right? Because that's all that's happening. And so what happens then is that once people have a little bit of a taste of what that actually is like in reality, not the fear in their heads, like, oh, what's going to happen? This is going to be awful. You walk through it with them. They come the other side, they realize the other side, they realized nobody died, and they have the positive outcome that now I have a better communication channel with my colleague. Now I have a clearer understanding of why my boss behaves the way they do. I have a better insight into how I could alter my behavior slightly so that my direct reports appreciate me more, right? And so when you start getting that fruit back already, and quite frankly, that happens pretty instantly. It happens pretty a lot faster than people think. Really? Then you have incentive to keep the practice of the open, direct, honest conversation. And rather, I always tell my clients, if you don't know what's going on, you will assume the worst, because we're wired to assume the worst so that we keep ourselves alive. But in the context of an organizational office, the worst is really not that bad. And also, that's what you're assuming. Why don't you go find out what's actually going on? Mm-hmm. So most of my organizations, I do a lot of organizational restructure, organizational culture assessments, and then suggestions for improvements and recommendations, implementation of the recommendations. 90% of the time, there is a need to really rethink communication channels, both technically, like, do we get too much email? Do we really want to use Slack in this way? Are we on Twitter? That kind of thing. And interpersonal communication skills. Like, if you have a thing to say, what is the benefit of sitting on it for a while versus saying it right away? You could argue for either approach depending on the context, but thinking it through together as a team is what makes the process quite revolutionary in terms of all of the outputs, Siobhan, that you were talking about, of better morale, more efficiency, more money, more of all the happy things, right?
Yeah. I think working for me, like traveling around the world, you realize every time you go to a culture, a country, a location, a city, even cities within the US, there's all these different cultural mores for each of those locations. You have to understand the mores or the cultural traditions or ways of communication for that location. But what's interesting is we bring these companies, these international companies, and we throw all these people together. And then yet there's assumption people are not paying attention to those sort of interesting cultural mores. And it don't even have to be from other countries. They can be from, you know, different generations, different, you know, also the ethnic, you know, backgrounds, or they could be socioeconomic, you know. So there's these different language things. And I think that was what I really learned a lot from facilitating, was that people just are like, they feel guilty when they don't know, and then they want to push it away. Mm-hmm. And then, but most of us don't know. We don't know what other people, if you haven't been raised around a particular cultural group, you're not going to know that group and how they interact or how they communicate. And I think that's what I think is interesting, is that, I don't know, 20 years ago, nobody cared. Nobody is like, we're just doing it this way and this is how it is. And now there is more, organizations are seeing that we really do have to learn how to find ways to communicate, or not ask our engineers to do a sprint during Ramadan, right? Like, you know, just like these sort of, let's pay attention to what is the demographic of our organization, and how do they want to communicate, and finding those things. And you know, I feel like you and I have talked a lot about this in our various ways of, it just requires people to have that vulnerability and that open-mindedness. And then some companies are just not willing to do it. And you can usually tell the difference between a company that does do it and versus a company that does, because they start to have a longer trajectory and trajectory as far as financial and revenue and growth and scaling as well. So any other thoughts on that? I was going to ask you some things that you do to, I know during the George Floyd spike in diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging work, the facilitation, I was doing facilitations weekly. It was just kind of insane during that couple years. And I'm at Amazon, we were just all over the map with doing them. And I think that was really when things started to spike up for you too. So what we really did with our teams is look at what are we also doing for our own personal development. Like, so we started having a mindfulness weekly meeting where we, our team members that were doing these facilitations, where we're dealing with this sort of really deep racial pain and grief and suffering. We were doing things together to make sure we're helping our group mental health, but also as individuals. So what are some of the things that you either both do for yourself or also put in place for organizations to keep this work going after you've gone to sort of keep the health of the organization continuing to thrive?
That's such a great question. I mean, first of all, I think that the organizations that actually grow and transform are the ones that have the clear intention to do so. That sounds so simple. It almost sounds kind of dumb to say, but it doesn't go without saying. Mm-hmm. Because when leadership in an organization is not clear about the work being important enough to actually do it, it's going to eventually unravel and not happen, or you're going to start and then you're not going to continue. If you ask anybody who's quit smoking or lost weight, they'll tell you that they probably didn't do it on their first try. And so I feel like anytime there's a profound change actually happening, it's a direction of travel and probably is a way of being that doesn't ever get you to the finish line, because I don't think there can ever be too much justice, too much equity, too much belonging. There's always learning and growth to be done, and too much compassion and kindness and appreciation for each other, right? As colleagues and as humans. And so I think that's really important to understand that. I always tell, when I have my initial call with a potential client, I always tell them if they want something about, again, organizational restructure, organizational culture, or even individual coaching for the leaders, I say, I'm going to take you through a psycho-spiritual journey, and you're going to laugh now because you think I'm joking. 3 months from now, you're going to be weeping, going like, oh. And I don't say that as a threat or as a bad thing. I say that because, again, while the workplace is not necessarily the appropriate context to go on a deep personal transformation, it will require you showing up with your heart and your body and your mind and your soul in order to actually do the work genuinely. Like, it will have to be that way. And so I think that what I really bring to organizations, especially leadership, is where is that boundary, right? Mm-hmm. If we're going to have these conversations, at which point I've had so many quote bosses tell me, I'm not a therapist, like I can't help this staff person anymore. And I'll say, you're absolutely correct. That's not your job. But your job is to say, hey, I see you struggling with this. And mm-hmm. I see that we are at the edge of our resources in this professional context. You might want to consider our employee assistance program, or you might want to consider our health insurance, right? Like this idea of not crossing boundaries and being clear on what's personal and what's professional, I think it's really important. And the Venn diagram of the personal and the professional does have an overlap, right? Because we can't turn parts of ourselves off. And so I think that anything a workplace can do, again, to support practices, Siobhan, like what you're mentioning in terms of how do you deal with stress, something as simple as that, mm-hmm. that, you know, some people will, you know, kind of like, oh my God, that's so basic. But for some people, it might be revolutionary to get really basic tools, right? Some people may have never heard of meditation. Some people may have never heard of breathing exercises. Some people may have never heard of journaling or a bunch of other techniques that are actually pretty simple, straightforward, free, accessible to everybody. But if for whatever reason you haven't been exposed to that, having the access to being exposed to it can be transformational. And so I think that supporting ourselves and our staff, colleagues, and leadership in acknowledging that the journey is a personal one to some extent, and that requires a different kind of care is really important. Also for the success of the projects, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we are all made of body, mind, spirit, and soul. Like you can't, we can try to scalpel it out and like, I think just make things corporate, but that doesn't really work. You're still dealing with humans and our customers are humans. And, you know, it's like the products and services that we sell are supporting people who have body, mind, souls, you know, spirits and souls. It's like, this is just the evolution of it all. And I think for us to like hide that for so long. And I think what I do find really inspiring is that more companies are hiring people like you and me to come in and do this kind of work. And that something so simple as journaling or meditation has really had a profound effect on especially those leaders, those facilitators that were really dealing with the hard, you know, especially during the George Floyd, when there was so much pain and grief around and people felt like they really couldn't do their job. They were just so traumatized by what was happening in the world that, and leaders didn't know what to do. They were, you know, so giving them some simple tools to help them cope with their own stress about it as leaders, and then also tools for the facilitators, the staff to just meditate, breathe. And it, again, these are things that we didn't used to bring. It seemed more of an Eastern philosophy to bring these kinds of things into the corporate world. But I feel like it has been really in the last five, you know, started probably about 10 years ago, but I do see in the last 5 years, it's really shot up and doing that. And I'm so glad you're thriving and doing well and helping organizations do what you need, especially in the nonprofit sector, because, you know, I have my own nonprofit and nonprofits can be a bit messy. It's been hard when I partner with other nonprofits. They take this type of work to a whole other level, I feel like, than the corporate side. The nonprofit side is so focused on their passion and vision that they sometimes forget how to take care of their people a little bit. So I think I'm so glad you're out there helping them.
Oh, thank you. That does happen in nonprofits. I think sometimes it's a very real resource constraint. Sometimes it's just more of a scarcity mindset and a fear of not having the resource. And moving really fast to try to accomplish the missions, forgetting to build up the infrastructure along the way. I think what's interesting about what you're saying around the tools, because I was thinking on occasion, I've done that. Like I've done actual ritual in organizational context with clients when people need to let go of past hurt or where there was some sort of conflict that we wanted to finally call it over, right? Like don't keep bringing up the same thing for the next 10 years. Is everybody okay with moving on? That kind of thing. But more often than not, the only thing I need to do is support everybody in finding what their truth is, deciding how much of it is appropriate and necessary to share, and then speaking it. And so what I mean by that is that very often we find ourselves in organizations tiptoeing around conversations and not really knowing how to approach a thing. And so sometimes it's as simple as me as, say, your supervisor saying, hey, Siobhan, I've noticed you've been really, really distraught since George Floyd's murder, and I completely understand why. How can we support you through this time? Mm-hmm. And more often than not, the staff person won't even have any requests. They're just so appreciative of being seen and acknowledged as a human. Yes. That's all it takes. Instead of ignoring the fact that this horrendous thing happened in the world and that Siobhan is acting a little weird or is calling in sick a lot or whatever is, right? Just naming what's true is the first step for any transformation. And over the years, I've come to realize that, unfortunately, that seems to be a skill that most people are not super comfortable with. And it always comes across kind of revolutionary because we're so used to BSing each other, especially at work. So when somebody shows up and he's like, hey, that's broken, let's fix it. It's kind of like, you know, that story of the emperor's new clothes where like there's the little kid that's pointing out that the king is walking around naked and everybody all of a sudden is like, oh, he is. And we were all pretending to see this fancy suit. And so what happens then is that that pressure of who's going to be the first one to actually acknowledge what's going on, once that happens, and that's why it's so incredibly powerful to have an external third party play that role. Because I walk into an organization, I speak a truth, and if people hate me or love me for it, it's completely irrelevant because I get to leave at the end of the project. And so I can take the heat for all of the people in the organization that are not willing or able to yet. I can model how it's done, and then I can leave people with more skills and resources and tools to get in the habit of having a direct, transparent, honest way of communicating and of being, which is the foundation for anything else we want to do together, right?
Yeah, so true. And it is so simple. It really is holding space is what I found. When I simplified things got, the impact became bigger. And it was really mostly holding space, empowering people with tools and resources to show them, you know, where their blind spots were, and holding that space of like, hey, your emotions are holding you back right now. And, you know, we're not supposed to talk about that in the corporate space, but when someone would see that, like, oh, you see me, this is the thing, again, being seen and heard, feeling like, you know, in One Mama, my nonprofit, we always say helping people feel like they're loved and they matter. Like, you know, our clinic does a lot of great things, but I think what it does most impactfully is that it shows people that they matter. We care enough. You matter enough for us to reach our hand out and try to help support you through this. And the same thing goes with this diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging work and whatever stages. And every company is in its own journey with that. And every individual's in their own journey with that. And even people like you and I who do this work, I'm fascinated by the blind spots that I have about, oh my God, I didn't realize that was inappropriate. You know, like we constantly have to be also taking a look at like things that seemed appropriate 20 years ago. Now you threw them through this new lens and you're like, oh wow, that was actually not appropriate. Like, and being willing to be teachable. And so that as a leader, you're holding that, you're mirroring that. And then you're also teaching other people, like, don't beat yourself up about it. Just take responsibility and take action and hold space for each, for yourself and for others. And I think you do that such an extraordinary way. And I do think you brought up a good point of the courage. I think that's one why you and I are friends. We're very outspoken about when we see something, even if no one else will say it, it's like, I don't think either one of us cannot say it. I think that's just who we are. And I think, do you feel like that's an ingredient to do this work? I mean, do you feel like that's a key core value that you have to be able to do this work?
I think so, but I also think that it's a skill that can be honed and further developed. And so it's a choice that you get to make about how do I want to be in the world and what do I want to stand for? And like I was saying, the practice of how am I feeling through it and am I going to let that stop me or not, right?
Yeah.
So I think that what you're saying is true in that it's super, super simple, but for many people, it's extremely difficult. And so simple and easy are not the same thing, right? And so I come into an organization and I'm like, here are my five simple steps that we're going to, you know, work through together. And folks go, wow, this looks amazing, of course. And then we're in it and they're like, oh. And then you get to realize, you know, because many of us are like, this is at times possibly awkward, but totally worth it. And there are people that for whatever reason are not ready, right? And that's okay. And they don't have to come along. But in an organizational context, then there are really challenging points of decision. So for example, an organization wants help making sure that they're living into their values of equity, inclusion, belonging. diversity. And then we start collecting data, speaking with people, doing surveys, and we start finding that there's a lot of places where the organization could improve. And then all of a sudden, leadership is in total denial about this is how your staff is perceiving the organization. So at that point, they get to make a choice. I'm there, my team and I are there to support them through coming out of denial, making different decisions, getting resources to be able to process this information and doing things differently or not. Now, I have a pretty rigorous screening process because folks that are not willing to go through that, I'd rather not work with because it's a waste of my time. Like, why am I going to take you halfway and not get you to the other side? But every once in a while, people genuinely believe they're able or willing or ready, and during the process, they realized they bit off more than they could chew. They've gone too far. It's not going to work. And that's totally okay. Again, back to the example of how many times did you try to change before you actually change? You're smoking, you're trying to go to the gym or whatever it was. So it's the same thing, right? Like the timing was off. Very, very common, actually that's not fair to say, but more common than I expected. I've been with a few clients in a situation where the second or third time that the organization tries to do this kind of work. And it's not that the previous consultant was not an expert colleague, it's that the timing was off. Yeah, because the psycho-spiritual alignment of the willingness to be self-aware, reflective, and open and vulnerable. Oh man, my staff thinks I'm kind of misogynistic. And this is why they think that. How do I sit with that? How do I sit with that and not hate myself? How do I sit with that and really want to change and transform? Maybe I can't say, maybe I have too much on a personal level. It would be abusive to expect so much of me. So it's not the right time. That's totally fine. You know, and hats off for trying again later. But it's, of course, very frustrating when it's not the right time and you thought it was the right time. So when it's at the leadership level, I think that the entire organization is basically on a holding pattern because you're not going to be able to move the work forward without the leadership. When it's at the more sort of generalized staff level, then offering folks resources and different on-ramping and off-ramping points for the work. In other words, you don't have to be totally 100% engaged in this work every day, all the time, all the days, but you can, you know, go in and out as you build your muscle, then that's more feasible. And of course, my dream client, which very gratefully 95% of my clients have been dream clients, is when everybody is ready and they're like, we can't be this way anymore, and we're willing to do the work to be different. And then you see it happen, and it's so satisfying. And yeah, it's just such a high to see, you know, humans in a professional context be more fulfilled, thriving, treating one another like they want to be treated, and doing great work for the world. It's amazing.
Yeah, there really is. I feel like when I started really shifting and being able to do this work in global organizations and moving that needle of change around race, sexism, ageism, all the isms, right, and all of those isms really are just lack of communication of how to understand the human in front of you, whatever that thing is, that ism is causing that snag, and being able to have that, moving that needle has been one of the most satisfying things in my life too. And I've watched how you've grown your business the last, I think it's 4 years now, right? Because in 2019, we were talking about you building this out in this new way. And it's been, I've seen how it also has really transformed you as a, like, you've always been a phenomenal person. I think I've known you 15 years, but I feel like what I've also noticed in you personally as a friend is that the transformational work that you're doing with your clients, I see it changing you in this really fundamental core, like you living by your values, living by the things that you really believe in. Not that you weren't before, but there's, you know, when something starts to permeate in a new way, I feel like I see that in you, and it's beautiful to watch, and I'm proud to be your friend. And I'm really proud of the work that you do, and that you're out there moving this needle of change in the world. And, you know, we get to, you know, be in the trenches together with this stuff. So I just first was like really proud of you, proud to have you as my friend, and proud that you do the work that you do. And I'm really love to witness the changes that it's made as you and a human, as a human too. And so thanks for letting me be part of this journey with you.
Thank you.
Well, we're kind of getting, I guess, close to time. Was there any like stories you wanted to tell or anything that feels, I don't know, like how you want to leave everything?
Yeah, look, I work with my clients individually with, you know, supporting leaders with coaching or advice mentoring. I also facilitate their teams or do broader projects that have all kinds of points of interaction with all staff. Like I said, I facilitate small discussion groups and one-on-one interviews, and we'll field all staff surveys. And what I find is that, again, the simple act of acknowledging what is the first step for revolutionary transformation. So say I'm in this nonprofit and our mission is blue, whatever that might be. And I'm getting, as the external consultant, I'm getting content from the organization that says that we're at blue, but the cost internally is not worth it, right? Like all of a sudden, and it's not rare that I tell, especially my nonprofit clients, and I was like, listen, why are you doing this work? You're doing this work because you want everybody to have a better life, regardless of the mission, whether it's like you're working on climate change, you're working on environmental issues, you're working on human trafficking. You're doing that kind of work because you want people to have a better life. And if you do that by you having a worse life, you have literally defeated the purpose of your own organization. Like, what are you doing, right? And so just having a look at what is, again, it's so simple, it almost sounds dumb, but most of us are so busy doing the actual work that we forget to step back and have the perspective of what's actually going on here, what is working, what is not working. The holding up a mirror to the organization is such a critical transformative step. And you can do it by yourself because it's called a blind spot for a reason. And right. So by definition, somebody else needs to hold up the mirror so you can see in that blind spot that otherwise you would not have access to. And then really understanding how far am I willing to go so that we don't fall into this negative space of feeling like, oh my God, everything's wrong. We've done, you know, all these mistakes over the years. How could we? Because I've seen that happen. And I'm like, no, you haven't. I mean, you have, but that doesn't mean that it's all lost or that you're not doing fantastic work. I think that holding paradox, it's like, yeah, you have a lot of improvement to embrace. This is true. What's also true is that you've done incredible work over the years. When people hear statements as simple as that, they're transformed because for whatever reason, that's an analysis for another time, people are very binary in their thinking in work contexts. So it's either good or it's bad, right? It's all or it's nothing. And when we realize that it's usually not that straightforward, there's this exhale. I'm like, okay, I'm not crazy or, you know, stupid for thinking us. It's like, it is true that it's more complicated, just like that simple acknowledgement. Yeah, I guess I'll leave it at that. I think that it's just so important to take the time to value self-reflection as an individual and as an organization. I've had, I don't know how many, several clients where the story is, yeah, we founded the organization. We had the mission of blue. There was three of us. Then there were 10. We were all around the kitchen table. And now there's 75. And we have no idea what happened. And so some people are grieving that they don't have that level of intimacy with the core founding group. Some people are feeling like outcasts because they weren't in the founding group. In the meantime, because you were focusing on the blue mission, instead of building an organization, nobody starts an organization because they love organizational development. Because organizational development is not a mission, it's a function that serves the mission, right? Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that people start these organizations, they start working their butts off, they start doing all this stuff, they come up for air and they're like, oh my God, we're huge and we have no systems, we have no processes, we have no procedures, we have no workflows, we don't have any clarity around how it is that we're meant to work together. And that's when they realized that they were assuming that that was going to happen organically. And right. That does not happen organically. That needs to be intentional. Because, I mean, let me rephrase. It does happen organically. It just may not happen as you would have wanted it to happen if you were more intentional about it, right? And so that's when my team and I come in to clean up, as I say, and it's like, imagine being a chef and you're like in the, you know, you're in a trance creating this beautiful meal. By the time you serve it, it's likely that the kitchen will be a war zone, you know? And it doesn't mean that you did the meal wrong. It just means that you could have either cleaned up as you go or get somebody to help you, or, right? Like, and so that's an important thing to remember, I think.
No, I think that's great. I always think of that. My analogy for it is you don't build a house without an architect. And most companies build, you know, all these other systems, but they don't build how they're going to build their people out, their talent acquisition, their leadership development, their trainings, and those sort of ad hoc as you go. And that's like building a house and you just build one little room and then you build another. And then by the time you're like, the toilets don't really get to the rooms, the bedroom, you know, it's like, It is sort of, yeah, if you build a little as you go, it can get a little messy. And so that's where people who come in who do the kind of work that you do or kind of that I work do, we come in and we kind of help build those architectural plans to get it so they can get to that next bigger level for the organization. But I'm really excited about the work that you're doing and hopefully I can have you back again and we can talk about some of the other cool things that you do. I know you have got a couple of other things that you do out in the world. So we'll spend some more time talking about that. But thank you so much, Maritza. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Siobhan. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Bye, everybody. Thanks for watching Leap Leaders Unplugged.